Welcome to another edition of Stokes and Folks. I'm your host, Spencer Stokes, and today I am joined by fellow former executive directors of the Utah Republican Party. So I have Scott Simpson, who, what years were you the executive director of the Republican Party?
Let's see. I think it started late 98.
I don't know if you're trying not to remember or remember.
Yeah, no, I'm actually sort of wrestling with the ground rules of the show. What about violence and cursing? You didn't really tell us. Yeah, this, but 88, and then I took a little interlude and then came back.
Okay.
So, and that, I think it was, when was it? Was it?
Till 03.
03.
Yeah. And you did a number of conventions, Chris Blake.
Yeah, I did two, 03 and 04. And I think when the chairs were shuffled to bring me into that position, Scott Simpson was still trying to figure out who the heck is this guy and what is he doing here in this office. But it worked out. It worked out for all of us.
It did.
And you both were in the offices on South Temple, right?
The offices created by one Mr.
Spencer
Stokes.
Oh, those offices.
Way to bring that around. Way to bring that around.
But they've recently moved out of those offices.
They just don't understand tradition like they once did.
No, it was 20 years. I was just thinking about this the other day. It's kind of a 20-year run at that location. But the Republican State Convention will be probably with those that are listening will be within the week that they're hearing this show. And all three of us have been and have war stories of the Republican state conventions. I was reminiscing that there's only been two Republican state conventions off the Wasatch Front. And I think I was involved with both of them. Scott, you and I sang the national anthem in 1992 at the Weber County convention.
At the fairgrounds.
And then were you around when we did the convention down at UVU with the drugged up horse?
So you hired me to produce that convention.
Yeah.
So sort of the backline. Yeah. So this is Spencer Stokes' sort of big vision thing is to bring.
Oh, by the way, this is Rob Bishop's big vision
massively
thing.
Live animals, give them, irresponsible amounts of sedatives. And then we'll use things like flashing lights and confetti and that sort of stuff just to
indoor fireworks.
Yeah.
I think the horse that Mike Leavitt rode in on was so drugged, it was having a hard time getting around. We knew with Mike Leavitt's high energy on top of a really high energy horse, that might not be the right combination. So,
well, I believe my first convention, I was telling you guys off air, my first convention was 1984. My dad ran for the 2nd Congressional District, the year David Monson ultimately won that seat.
How many people were in the field?
There were a bunch that, I might screw up some of my names, Bart Barker ran. There was a Nixon that ran. There was either Alice Shearer or Alice Shearer ran.
Okay.
Because Francis Farley was the Democrat that year. So that was my first convention. It was the big Reagan year. And
that was Reagan midterm.
Yep.
Election.
His second reelect.
Excuse me.
Or his first second, reelect. Yes. Yeah, second election is what I meant to say. But they brought in a big giant elephant. The Blake family, we had a popcorn machine. And
Cutting Edge back in 1984.
Yes, it was a big hit, I might add. And breakdancers.
Free, you're saying free stuff at the Republican convention was a big hit?
It was, yeah.
Crazy.
Surprisingly, the delegates were interested in some of that popcorn. But we also had breakdancers, and maybe that was a little too cutting edge for Republican delegates in 1984. But my parents once got me breakdancing lessons as a young kid. I don't know what lesson they were trying to teach me, but it definitely helped with my moves.
So that was your first convention then.
That was my first convention. Yep.
Chris Blake breakdancing. That's an image I just can't erase now. I'm going to need counseling.
I hope all the delegates tomorrow get to picture that.
Yeah. And who knows what, this is obviously a off cycle, an odd year election, which means that Scott, what happens at these mid year?
Well, it's an organizing convention, which means it's you're sort of the party gets its chance to rebuild itself for the coming election cycle. It's an interesting dynamic because it's a different kind of turnout, I think, of delegate than you expect in a nominating cycle, right? The last election, COVID notwithstanding, typically folks that are newly elected delegates are pretty fired up. They tend to want to be at the convention. There are lots of reasons. They've been courted severely for several weeks, you know, and there's this promise of free stuff. But it tends to be a much more of a ideological rodeo, I think, than your typical nominating
convention. So what do we have now, current delegates? I know during that UVU year we had 5,000 delegates, but I think they've pared it down.
It was mostly 35, I think, for a long time, but I think it might be at 4 now.
I think it is 4 now.
I think that's right. You know, I found the organizing 4,000 convention to be far more stressful. So when I ran the 03 convention, it was really my first. Joe Cannon was on the ballot, and I was nervous we were going to lose, and I don't have any we won handily, but it's just nerve-wracking. You know, your job depends on who the chairman's going to be. So I found that convention far more nerve-wracking to try to find the right balance, but also realizing, man, if my chairman loses, I guess I got to go find a new job.
Well, and you're still trying to pay off the even year elections debt, and you're trying to pay for this convention, which is, I don't think folks fully understand how difficult it is to pay for conventions year after year. But yeah, I think I can see why it's the off years are, I think, more nerve-wracking even than the, because lots of people are willing to spend money and right. pay for advertising and booth space in an even year when it's a nominating convention. Organizing much more difficult.
Well, and to Scott's point, you really have these different factions within the party, right? You have the folks that are ideologically driven, that are the, you know, what we often call the grassroots. You have the elected officials. You have a donor class, and all of it sort of collides at the convention, and it makes it really challenging to balance all of those different factions at a party. You have folks that want to sit there and debate, you know, resolutions, but also want to debate bylaws and constitutional stuff. And for a lot of people, it's a little bit inane.
And throw the other factions under the bus, right?
No question.
Well, we're already seeing that this year,
yeah,
right?
Every convention, organizing conventions in particular, it's how can we fillet some incumbent sitting elected officials?
And I think the grassroots super conservatives know that if they can keep people there, the longer they can keep people there, and the more objections they can raise, when you get to a situation where you're starting to vote on bylaws and things in the platform, people start dwindling off, and you have a much more conservative crowd there.
Well, the other thing that they just don't remember, and this is the beauty of technology, all of us remember counting votes for all of these things, which took half the day, right? You're trying to figure out how to count, even ballots. We did the ranked choice voting. My convention was the first time we had done that, and it was a disaster. Was that the second time?
O2. Yeah. So it
okay.
was just, yeah.
So I apologize. We had just too many ballots. It took us a week to count. Both of you, I think, came into the office to help us count, you know, who was going to be the national committee man and national delegates. We were able to get the governors and some of the other key ones done, but it was a real logistical challenge. And now with technology, so much of that is so much easier than it was. You know, people are coming with their own voting device. We didn't have any of that. We had to figure out how the packet's going to be distributed and how they're going to vote and where we're going to distribute that and then where we're going to go count and how we're going to do, you know, count even when they're vote. It was a hard.
And do we need to have 7-hour conventions still? I mean, because of that technology. But even then, I've just thought over the last, and some people look forward to this as this form of entertainment, right? It's where they exercise their whatever
God-given rights, constitutional rights.
Yeah, there's that, but there's also that sort of emotional need that came out of high school debate, or I don't know what it is, but
Model UN maybe.
There you go. But do you
spot on for the Republican convention, the UN?
Do we have to do that? I mean, I would love to see somebody run for party chair on a platform of 90-minute conventions, because really, there's very few things that the party needs to do at these things.
So my first convention was 1982. I was handing out little boutonnieres to delegates for Orrin Hatch. The Northern Utah State Director for Orrin Hatch was a woman by the name of Norma Holmgren. She was from Tremont, and she talked me into coming down and handing out those boutonnieres. But later on, after I returned, you know, back into from my my sister missionary 18-month stint away from the state, I got involved with conventions. And back then it was punch card, and we had different colors of punch card ballots all in one packet. And we just handed them out when people first came to the convention. And then we told them which color of ballot we were going to use for which race. And they sat in their seats, punched it with a stylus, and literally just handed their ballots down to the end of the row. And we picked them up. And then all of a sudden conspiracy theorists entered and said that wasn't secure. And then we went to the,
grounds for revolution.
Right there. So they stopped the convention. Everybody went out. And they dropped their ballot off. They had a wristband, and then you had your name tag punched.
Or they would brand you on the forehead.
Something like that. Something. Put a chip in. And then it just took forever to... And one of my favorite conventions was the... one of the re-elections. It was, I believe, at the Maverick Center of... Mike Leavitt. It was the year that he was forced into a primary. So
that
I guess
me.
He was 92.
02.
02.
Yep.
02. And I just remember as they went to the second round of balloting, when they were doing the final round to see if Mike Leavitt could get the, at that time, rec was at 70%. I think it was still at 70% because that's fluctuated whether if you became the nominee at 60% or 70%. And I remember Amy Hansen and Allison Bell standing out by the doors of the Maverick Center with their arms out. It's not over yet. There's go back in. There's one more round of balloting. There's one more round. And I think it was just a handful of votes forced Mike Leavitt into a primary against, was it Davis?
Davis.
The guy's name?
Glenn Davis? I can't remember.
Yeah, I don't think it's Glenn.
And Hatch narrowly missed that, or succeeded narrowly, though.
That was the year that Barbara Smith, the venerable, long-serving Relief Society president for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, also known in the Last Prophets era as the Mormons, he had... Barbara Smith nominate him, and she was booed. And I think that was when people thought, maybe we've gone too far. Maybe things have changed.
Well, that the percentage is an interesting thing, the way that plays out. If I'm not mistaken, correct me if I'm wrong, you guys will remember, Joe Cannon 60% at Bob Bennett. Do I have that correct?
He got 60%, but he needed 70.
But he needed 70 right. In order to avoid the primary, which became one of the more expensive primaries the state probably still has ever seen. And I'm sure Joe in particular would love to have that money back. But, you know, that it is fascinating how that plays out, those percentages. I mean, it's changed the course on some of these races if that percentage is higher or lower than it was,
well,
what it was previously.
That particular election cycle was the cycle that made several massive changes in politics. We changed the threshold from 60 or from 70 down to 60%.
And then the primary date.
And then the primary date, because the primary, if everyone remembers, was in September. And so from May to September, Joe and Bob Bennett just beat the crap out of each other on the airwaves. And that's when everybody said, we got to come up with a smaller threshold, so 60% to get a nominee. And then they moved the primary to June.
So that fall, I was a student body officer at West High School, West High. Yeah. And we had agreement from Joe Cannon to use...
By the way, that was the baccalaureate program.
International baccalaureate, yes.
I think you were in that.
From the streets,
right.
Yeah.
So, and that's amazing that they still elected one of the snobs to be student body president.
True.
So kudos to you for putting the coalitions together to win that.
Thank you.
It's the UN.
Yeah.
Again, the UN.
Also, Michael Kennedy was the student body president, a Hatch chief of staff in years to come.
What?
So,
with
us. I was the vice president. He was the
president.
Oh,
got it. Okay.
But we had an agreement from Joe Cannon to come to our homecoming parade or day, and we were going to throw balloons out from his hot air balloon. So I would have been able to meet Kurt Bramble back in 1992, but it rained that day, and so it all went for
naught. So Joe was flying around in Kurt Bramble's hot air balloon?
Yeah, he had a big Joe Cannon hot air balloon. I assume Kurt had some influence on that, but a big Joe Cannon hot air balloon. We had... secured the rights to it for that day.
And that was the convention that was up in Weber County. It was kind of one of the conventions to end all conventions. It was the open gubernatorial seat. It was the open United States Senate seat because Jake Garn wasn't running. And I remember I had just become a county commissioner, and the Bob Bennett, Mike Tolles was his name. He was the campaign manager for Bob Bennett. He came in and started screaming at Greg McDonough, who was the convention chairman for that year, that there was a tree right in the middle where their tent was supposed to go. And I was trying to ask Greg a question, and he was just screaming at him that they couldn't set their tent up because of this tree. And this place, the Golden Spike Arena, had just barely been built. I mean, this tree was maybe a $30 tree. And I said, well, can you guys just stop yelling at each other? Why don't you just cut the tree down? And he looked at me like, you want me to cut the tree? I said, yeah, are you willing to buy and replace it? And he said, yes. And I think still to this day, there's a little fledgling stump where it hasn't been replaced at the Weber County Fairgrounds. But it was pretty, that was a big, massive, the Joe Cann and Bob Bennett year. So kudos for you guys for getting the balloon. Was this prior to the primary, or was this after, or prior to the convention, or after the convention?
After convention. So it was fall, just before the primary. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah.
So you guys were kind of somewhat picking sides, or had you gotten Bob
we
Bennett
wanted
to
a
come?
Hot air balloon, Spencer. Yeah. it could have been anyone.
Or
at
were
that
you
point.
Or were you intrigued by Bob Bennett's taxes on a postage card or on a postcard?
As a 16, 17 year old at the time, it certainly kept
the hot
my,
air balloon.
Yeah, it had
hot
my attention,
balloon.
But yeah.
Well, what you did is you delayed being yelled at by Kurt Bramble by just a few years. You narrowly missed that.
I did. I actually would have loved that experience. So it would have been a good one.
Well, I mean, who hasn't been there? I mean, it's a it's a rite of passage.
No question.
It's a rite of passage. Indeed. I still say that Kurt Bramble will go down in history as one of the great compromisers of the Utah State Legislature, being able to bring two very disparate sides together and bring them together in a room and kind of force some kind of solution to a piece of legislation.
Kurt was he was either our convention chair in 2004 or our bylaws chair. I can't remember which, but he was masterful and really a huge supporter on that state central committee for me.
Very useful.
Yeah. I mean, just was a real asset and helped manage things and could convince people. It was a great value.
And, you know, here's another Kurt Bramble thing. And when he first ran for office, I was the director of the party. I think it could have been 2000.
Yep. 2000.
He somehow had convinced everyone that he was in trouble. That, you know, this is September of the election year. I mean, you know,
Utah County.
Yeah, the nominee for the
art of the deal.
Oh my gosh, he had everybody convinced, and he was just raking in dough because of the alarm bells that he was ringing, and I think he got 74% or some ridiculous number like that.
Yeah, but go ahead.
No, I was going to ask, what was your biggest mistake from a convention you ran? Is there something that sticks out in your mind? Because I've got one that really sticks out.
Always my biggest mistake was trying to go too big, and
that's really surprising coming from you, Spencer.
I mean, and it was fed by Rob Bishop when, you know, Rob Bishop's a theater guy. So when Rob Bishop envisioned this Utah County McKay Event Center, we can bring in live animals. And then he wanted to do a whole week's worth of events all around the state leading up to. And I remember thinking, how are we going to pull this off? And we had Orrin Hatch and Janice Cap Perry. I don't know if you know this, but Orrin Hatch is a songwriter.
I've heard that.
And Janice Cap Perry, they were going to do a Sunday devotional at the Egyptian Theater in Ogden. And I thought to myself, I think you've got to remember this guy. I thought to myself, how are we going to fill 800 seats of like regular people on a Sunday evening? And we had this thing called the risograph machine, and we printed off like 60,000 flyers and stuck them in the Standard Examiner. And I remember showing up to the event that night an hour early to kind of get it ready. And there was a line like going around the block of all of these Mormon women who worshipped Janis Kapp Perry. I don't think they even knew who the hell Orrin Hatch was, but they were coming for the Janis Kapp. That's when I learned the power of, you know, primary songs. Could really bring people out.
So I remember,
too big. That's my biggest problem.
I'm gonna tell the story. Spencer's biggest mistake was hiring me in 1997. To do the show again. That was, it was an organizing convention, and he wanted this big moment. He had this backdrop. It was probably the arch or some iconic backdrop, but he had the singer songwriter Orrin Hatch had brought in somebody to sing this song. We're going to have this big finale.
And I think it was I Love Old Glory or something. Old Glory. Yeah. That was the song.
Uh huh. He opted not to release the 50 Bald Eagles at the end, which would have been really
well because
fantastic.
We didn't have enough lighter fluid for them to be 50 flaming bald eagles.
But at the very so he had this great idea, and Utah State used to have this magnetically released Garrison flag, this massive flag that you'd click these switches, and the magnets would release, and the flag would drop out of the ceiling. Massive flag.
And it was super amazing when it happened.
It's a fantastic thing. Well, so but it's the kind of thing that it either happens or it doesn't happen. And it maybe doesn't happen perfectly. You have all these triggers across the full length of the stage that have to go at the same time. Anyway, so we sing the song. We have to raise the backdrop out of the, or the, there's a screen, I think. Raise the screen out of the way. There's the big song, and it's the, what was the guy that sang it? I forget. His sister was married to Larry King. Anyway.
Oh yeah, I came up with the name of the song. You have to come up with the name of the singer. He was an amazing singer,
fantastic.
Though.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
He did.
Ingemann, was his last
Ingemann.
Name?
Yeah. He totally nailed it. We're at this grand moment. I hit the go cue with the production company. Nothing. We get nothing. Nothing happens. It was this just sad moment. So I think that was probably the.
But you know who benefited from that, if I remember right? The college Republicans had their little convention right after, and we unleashed the Garrison flag
for
them. And
the chairman of the college Republicans at the time was Scott Benson.
Yeah,
who later became an executive director in his own right.
Yes, and so, chief of staff to Rob Bishop.
Let's give kudos to the college Republicans. Remind me the couple from down south.
You mean the teenage Republicans?
Bill and Ada Cox.
Bill and Ada Cox.
Legends. Seriously, legends in the state Republican Party.
And not only legends, but helped fuel and run these conventions. Those kids came up. They brought a huge crew. Because didn't they come up? Was it Washington County?
Or was it
Kane County?
Garfield
County. Like, he lived over Hell's Backbone, yeah. Bill and Ada and Cox.
That whole thing was born out of the Grant Staircase Escalante monument that was designated. All these parents were so irritated, and Bill and Ada, as I think then chairs of the party or something, they ended up creating what was the largest extracurricular club in Garfield County. And for years, they were the number one teenage Republican club
in America.
Yeah, they were awesome.
And they would bring a school bus up full of kids. I think they actually slept at the Credit Union League, didn't they, one night?
1 year. But there's a great story. Olean Walker, she was just awesome. She would go to these county conventions at a time when her boss was less motivated to go to these conventions. And I remember Bill and Ada talking to the teenage Republicans who were at the county convention. Governor Walker was there, and she invited them to stay at her house, and she hosted them at her house. They all
the lieutenant governor, convention. Was she governor at
she
the time?
She was lieutenant governor,
and so she had. I didn't know that story. She had the teenage Republicans sleep
at her house.
That's a great and well deserved by those kids. I mean, they were so awesome.
Well, and Tyler went on to become. He was at one of Bill and Ada Cox's, he went on to become like the lands person for, I think, Bob Bennett later on in years. But
well, I was just going to mention my mistake. It pales in comparison to the Flaming Bald Eagles, but it was the 04 convention. So we had, the race for governor, Huntsman and Karras and Lampropoulos and
Fred
and Olean Walker.
I remember Fred Mart.
Yeah. I had vetted that script and looked over it. Anyway, when Joe Cannon got up his chair to announce the order of speakers, I had left off Fred Lampropoulos. And I just sank you know, I'm sitting off stage and I'm thinking, he didn't say Fred's name. I pull out my script. It doesn't say Fred's name. How could I miss, you know, and I hear people say, hey, where's Fred? And I, Joe, you know, I had to get his attention. Fred Lampropoulos is six. And Joe, I've never seen Joe mad, but he was not happy. He was not happy with me, and I don't blame him.
That was a crucial mistake. Well, hey, thank you for joining us on Stokes and Folks. It's always a great time to have you guys in studio, and hopefully this year's convention goes off without a hitch. Like us where you get your podcasts. You can like us any place, I guess, but especially where you get your podcasts. This has been another episode of Stokes and Folks.